It's really fun to hear this space come so alive. So thank you for engaging in the way that you wanted to do that. We hope we give you that freedom to figure that out for your own self. So what questions did you ask, or what did you talk about? What are you wondering about? And I'm going to do my best to communicate through this microphone to the rest of you all. What do you wonder about? Yeah. Tanya's saying, wouldn't it be normal to just have the opposite reaction?
Yeah,
what do you mean?
Like the father maybe won't forgive him.
Like maybe the father won't forgive him.
Maybe that's accurate. Uh-huh. I mean, I know people where dad was not happy.
Right.
He didn't welcome him home. And what about the son? I mean, they did the other son.
Which
that wasn't in
the older son?
The older son, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wait.
Right. Yeah, if you read on your yellow sheet, there's this whole other story of the older son that sticks around and never left home, right? And says, what gives? Why does he get the party, right? Yeah. Yeah, so this sounds like you were asking, what if the father acted the exact opposite of he did in the story? What if this, well, you know, what if the son who ran away came back? Maybe he was coming back to scam his dad. You know, maybe, and then what about the elder son? What if he reacted in a different way? Good questions. Yeah.
But I think as a father, if your kid was gone 2 or 3 years or whatever, never saw him, didn't know if he was alive or dead, when you would see him, I sure can go along with what the dad just went nuts and be so thankful.
So Ron is identifying with that, you know, not knowing if your son was alive or dead. Celebrating. Yeah, I don't know if you ever had that feel. I mean, I'm not a parent, but parents, have you ever had that feeling when you've been worried about your kid and then they show up, you kind of want to kill them first? Right? Yeah. I mean, it's. But yeah, but you don't. Instead, you celebrate and you love. Right. Yeah, yeah.
Well, I think finally, there's something foundational that's missing.
Ooh, she said there's something foundational that's missing. What's missing? Oh! I thought you had the answer. Let's sit with that. You mean from the story? Something's missing from the story?
Well, it's like it's not finished.
Ah. She said it's like the story is not finished, that it's incomplete. Ooh, let's just sit with that, huh?
Yeah. Isn't it rather interesting that the mother is not mentioned?
The mother, isn't it rather interesting that I see lots, yeah, yeah. The mother is not mentioned in the story. That, I had not thought of that. That's a great insight. What else did you wonder about? Yeah.
I always, whenever I read the story, I always identify with the older brother a little bit.
So Ruth identifies with the older brother who stayed back and didn't leave.
I am the oldest child.
So you're a good daughter.
Rule follower, and you know, in school and everything, and you know, those of you that are like me, sometimes we do wonder why do the naughty ones get all the attention?
Why do the naughty ones get all the attention? Oh wow, listen to that reaction.
And I think the father's response to the older son is really important because he reassures him and says, Of course I love you. Everything I have is yours. This isn't somehow, this isn't about you.
Is
basically what.
So she's commenting.
Brother.
Yeah, the father's response is, this is not.
It's not about you.
Everything I have is yours. Yeah. It's, I've not taken away from you. It's yours. Well, in fact, I forgot. See, this story, we could just talk about this for hours. Don't worry. But I forgot to put this up here. Love is not a pie. Hand out your 8 slices and then you're done. And then there's a little pie joke for my math people. You got some math, whoop, whoop, add some math people in. So I think God likes math, which, you know, confounds me. But let's just be truthful here. This is a place where we've confessed and been forgiven. You're okay? Who identifies with the older son saying, what gives, why are you giving a party when, you know, he wasted all? So raise your hand. Do you identify with the older son? Okay. Do you, and you can raise your hand more than once. That's how this works, right? Raise your hand if you identify with the prodigal son, the one who ran away. Raise your hand. Yeah, we should get all you together now. And then raise your hand if you identify with the father welcoming back the son. Okay? So elements of each of those things. Yeah. So prodigal, the word, means recklessly extravagant. So one who spends or gives lavishly, comma, foolishly. And so isn't it interesting that we call this story the prodigal son? Because he does extravagantly waste his father's money. But I think it's God. This is prodigal God, I think. Because God extravagantly shares that love with this son. Now, for him to go to his dad and say, "Can I have my inheritance?" was the equivalent of saying, "You're dead to me." Okay? That was the equivalent of his saying, "You're dead to me." And then he leaves. And he goes off and he lives the party lifestyle. I mean, we even get a few kind of fun details about what he's off doing. And then he comes to his senses. It says in Scripture on verse 17, "But when he came to himself, he said," and he's kind of looking at his dire situation, like, "My dad's servants got it better than me." And he comes home, and do you recognize he comes home not expecting to be treated like a son, but thinking, "Well, I at least could be welcomed back as a servant. I could feed the pigs at my dad's place and eat a little bit better," right? So he comes back not even expecting to be welcomed as a son. But that's not the kind of God we believe in. Are there any other questions? I'm going to start heading towards like wrapping it up, but I don't want to cut off any other questions or wonderings you have about this story. There are so many ways to read it. And in fact, I want to end with showing this picture. It's a Rembrandt depiction of the prodigal son. And I read a whole bunch of art history. I kind of went down this rabbit hole, and I was like, "Okay, you're not going to give an art history lecture, Laura, because there's all kinds of opinion about who is and who is not in this picture." But I'm just going to give you my bias instead. So what I see, and you're welcome to interpret this how you will, but this is what I see, is that, well, it's the father and the son are in the prominent part of the picture. The prodigal, the one who has returned home, is in the rags, kneeling at his father's feet, and the father has his hands on his shoulders. And then we've got the three figures. And there's one in the very shadowy background there. You can hardly make him out. Even with all the lights off in this room, he's still kind of hard to see. I want you to imagine that the scribes and the Pharisees and the tax collectors and the sinners are also part of this picture. That, let's say, God is the Father welcoming back the Son, so the sinners and the tax collectors, right? That's the son. And then the older brother is in the background. I see him as that shadowy figure, the older brother, kind of just simmering in his resentment. And then the scribes and the Pharisees kind of standing in judgment. I think we can get awful caught up in keeping hash marks on who is good and who is not. We confess our stumbling blocks, right? We can all, I can be that older brother and stand back and say, "He didn't do anything to deserve this," right? But what we hear in Scripture again and again and again is Jesus saying, "I'm not here for this, for the healthy. I'm here for the sick. I'm not here for the 99 sheep that are safe and sound right here. I'm here for the one who's off, lost in the thicket somewhere. I'm going to look for that one stupid coin that you think doesn't add up to anything. I'm going to put everything down and look until I find that lost coin." You see, God does different math than we do. We keep nice and tidy hash marks, and God doesn't even waste time doing that. Now, I watched this show. It's a Netflix original show called The OA. You either love it or hate it, so I'm going to tell you that right up front. or you're indifferent to it, I guess. But anyway, there's a compelling scene in this series where the woman who's called the OA goes to the school to talk to a teacher who is going to expel this kid named Stephen. Stephen's awful. You start out the series, you do not like this kid. He's bad. He's actually violent. So he's on the edge of being expelled from school. And so, but the OA has befriended him. And so she goes to the school to talk to the teacher, posing as his mother. She's not his mother. And so she's having this conversation with the teacher. And the teacher is saying probably what all the teachers here would say is, she says, why did you start to teach? What was your love of teaching? And the teacher starts to talk about all the kids that are there to learn. And she's there for the kids that are there to learn. And then, and there's more to it, but the OA says, yeah, but Stephen is lost. And he actually needs you. Stephen is lost. He actually needs you. I think Jesus tells this story knowing that we can all find ourselves in that story, whether we are scribes and Pharisees or whether we are tax collectors and sinners, whether we are the prodigal son off having a good time thinking only of ourselves. I have a quote I want to read to you from one of my seminary professors, Eric Barreto, who says this. He says, the sharpest line Jesus draws in the Gospels is not between us and them. The sharpest line Jesus draws in the Gospels is between those who think they get it but don't, and those who didn't know they were getting it but were. And then he says, the Gospel is surprise and reversal. The Gospel should shock us into a new way of life, a new way of seeing the world. And then he closes with this. A Gospel call to insiders alone, or even first to insiders, short circuits Jesus' surprising call. So if we think this is only for us, it short circuits Jesus' surprising call beyond the boundaries of belonging that we inevitably and sinfully use to circumscribe God's relentlessly expansive grace. So his claim is we're always trying to rein in God's grace when it doesn't have any boundaries that we can make sense of. So what this means is that that grace includes you. There's no one here that is outside of that grace. And I would dare to say there's no one that we will meet outside of this place that falls outside of God's grace or mercy. And that's the scandal of this story. That's the scandal of the Gospel. And pretty soon, in just a few minutes, we're going to come to the table. And it's a table of rejoicing. This is the celebratory meal that we share together that welcomes us, whether we are prodigal or Pharisee or tax collector or sinner. This table unites us, no matter who it is we identify with most, because no one is lost when it comes to the prodigal God. God is just that reckless with us. Isn't that good news? Yeah, we say, thanks be to God.